most people wanted me to write. Friends, agents, editors, and even family asked me to write a tell-all about my experience in the White House to confirm their opinions of President Donald Trump. Those who supported the president would have liked me to depict him as an unconventional leader who, despite his brash style, made decisions and implemented policies that advanced American interests. Those who opposed the president wanted an account to confirm their judgment that he was a bigoted narcissist, unfit for office. And they wanted me to write it immediately so that the book might influence the outcome of the 2020 presidential election. Although writing such a book might be lucrative, I did not believe that it would be useful or satisfactory for most readers. The polarization of America's polity and that of other free and open societies is destructive, and I wanted to write a book that might help transcend the vitriol of partisan political discourse and help readers understand better the most significant challenges to security, freedom, and prosperity. I hoped that improved understanding might inspire the meaningful discussion and resolute action necessary to overcome those challenges. Introduction. A great deal of intelligence can be invested in ignorance when the need for illusion is deep. Saul Bellow. On Friday, February 17, 2017, I was in my hometown of Philadelphia on the way to the Foreign Policy Research Institute, a think tank. The purpose of the meeting was to discuss the findings of a study I had commissioned on Russia's annexation of Crimea and invasion of Ukraine in 2014. As the Lieutenant General Director of the clunkily named Army Capabilities Integration Center, my job was to design the future Army. To fulfill that responsibility, I sought to understand how Russia was combining conventional and unconventional military capabilities along with cyber attacks and information warfare, what we were calling Russian New Generation Warfare, RNGW. The study recommended how to improve the future Army's ability to deter and, if necessary, defeat any forces that employed similar capabilities against the United States or our allies. We modeled the effort on General Don Starry's study of the 1973 Arab-Israeli War. Starry's findings helped drive a renaissance in the post-Vietnam War Army based on changes in fighting doctrine, training, and leader development. It was clear to me that Russia, China, and other nations had studied the U.S. Army after the lopsided U.S. victory over Saddam Hussein's armed forces in the 1991 Gulf War and the initially successful U.S. military campaigns during the 2001 invasion of Afghanistan and the 2003 invasion of Iraq. As a trained historian, as well as a soldier, I believe that the old saying, "The military is always prepared to fight the last war," was wrong. Militaries that encountered the greatest difficulties at the outset of war studied their recent past only superficially. Learning from history, I believed, was essential if the U.S. military were to maintain its competitive advantages over potential enemies. I intended to begin the discussion at the Institute with a description of how RNGW combined disinformation, denial, and disruptive technologies for psychological as well as physical effect. Russian President Vladimir Putin and his generals wanted to accomplish their objectives below the threshold of what might elicit a military response from the United States and countries of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO. RNGW seemed to be working, and we were likely, I thought, to see more of it. The stakes were high. Russian aggression in the last decade had taken many forms, from cyber attacks to political subversion to assassination and the use of military power such as the invasion of Georgia in 2008. Russia had changed the borders of Europe by force for the first time since the end of World War II. It seemed likely that Putin, emboldened by perceived success, would become even more aggressive in the future. It was warm for February. I was enjoying the walk down Walnut Street when my phone rang, displaying a partially blocked Washington, D.C. based number. It was Katie Walsh, the White House Deputy Chief of Staff. She asked if I could travel to Florida that weekend to interview with President Trump for the position of Assistant to the President for National Security Affairs. I said yes,